Welcome to Ampersound, a podcast brought to you by the team at Visualist. Ampersound features snippets from our interactive digital magazine, Ampersand. Every episode, we speak to multi-hyphenates who have captivated our minds. We ask them about their code switching, routines, and mindsets. For the full stories, check out ampersand-mag.com. That's ampersand-mag.com. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Today, I'm with lawyer, beauty entrepreneur, and dancer, Sara Shah. We talk about the power of dance, the meaning of beauty, and the challenge of getting into the creative flow. Stay tuned to hear more, and we hope you enjoy the stories. I saw on your Instagram profile, in your bio, you've got a statement, every problem can be solved by dance.
Yes. I've danced since I was three. And when you're young, you end up in like ballet, that type of thing. So I did a little bit of like tap and jazz. So my love for dance really started with that. And it's something that I've continued on through my journey. So, you know, back in school, like I was able to take a bunch of different classes. And then when I got to college, university, I think how you would say it in the UK. You want to go to law school. So here in the US or in Canada, if you want to go to law school, you can have an undergraduate in anything. And so you could just have a bachelor's degree and then you take the LSAT and you go on to law school. So I remember, and I was 16 when I started college and, I was able to, accelerate my, I know,
16.
I am a big nerd at heart. I mean, if someone just paid me, you know, a decent salary to be a student for the rest of my life, I'd be so happy with that. But so I remember like fighting my parents and saying, I just want to do a dance degree. And they were like, look, you know, if law school doesn't work out, you should have another backup. And so I ended up minoring in dance. So I did all kinds of dance and I've danced even through the years. Most recently, I was part of a Latin ballroom dance performance team and we'd do these little performances in our local area. And so that's the first thing that we recently moved to Austin, Texas. And that's the one thing that I want to get back. I'm just itching to get back into, once the pandemic, you know, things calm down with the pandemic, but yeah, I love that. Like my daughter and I, even right now, if I'm just having a stressful day, all I have to say is, Eliza, do you want to dance? And then we'll just put it on the Alexa and just dance away. So yeah, we're dance lovers in this home.
What's your favorite song right now? What's on your playlist?
Oh my God. I'm not going to say it's Baby Shark because that plays a lot around the house. What's my favorite? Honestly, I love dancing to Stand By Me, like the Benny King version. That's me and my daughter's dance song. That's the song we dance to. So she'll, you know, before she can even talk, she'd be like, Stand By Me. Like she would just like mouth some of the words. But I think that's like my song when I just like, I'm exhausted after a long day or just want to dance. Like that's our song to dance to. It's Benny King.
I love that. So you live in Austin now and I believe you grew up in Canada.
Yes. Yes. So I'll take you back to a little bit of my journey and then I can share more about how Jern got started too. So absolutely. I actually grew up in Dubai until I was about 13 and then my parents migrated to Canada. So there was a big wave of a lot of people migrating from the Middle East to Canada. And then I moved to the States for law school. So I was in Michigan, but I was already engaged to my now husband. And then he lived in the New York area. So that's where we moved back in 2011 is when I moved to, you know, near him and we moved near the city. And yeah, so we recently moved, I would say it's been 6 months that we moved to Austin, mm-hmm. Texas from the New York area.
You worked before law school for a year. What were you doing?
So I applied to law schools in Canada, in Ontario, and I didn't get in my first time around. So I applied when I was still finishing up college. And you know the LSAT score. I know the UK doesn't have that, but my LSAT score wasn't that great. So then I took off some time to take it again But I worked, I mean, it was, I was a personal banking officer. So it took, some time to just get some real world experience as well as, you know, be able to take the LSAT again. And then I ended up getting into the States where I ended up going. But, same thing. I think I was, when I was younger, I was just so fixated on becoming a lawyer that I don't think I really understood what that actually meant. So I started my career in law in New York in securities fraud defense, you know, white collar crimes. Mm-hmm. The SEC was, prosecuting, especially at post-crash, there was a lot of SEC prosecution. So that was like a really, active field around the time when I graduated, which was back in 2011. And so I ended up starting my career there. And then I transitioned, I think I burnt out. So I did that for about like a year and a half. And then I just remember, working, and they say like working those 80-hour weeks and, spending all your time behind a computer. And I missed friends' weddings and, just things that you're just oh my God, I just have to, you're like, it's almost this expectation that you put on yourself that you have to, fit into this like 80 work model. And then I think I burnt out and then I ended up taking, leaving there and ended up at Barclays and I was doing more, compliance, style work. So I was there for about a year and a half and, I wasn't happy, I was like, I wasn't fulfilled. And so I remember my husband saying, look, like, what do you enjoy? And so I said, I'm like, I think I'd enjoy, so I remember I bucketed law into two buckets and I said happy law and not so happy law. So like not so happy law is like criminal work or personal injury. And then I was like happy law. Okay. People, I love the idea of people starting businesses and I like corporate law and, I want to help founders live their dreams. And so I ended up starting my own law practice, where I would help startups and small businesses and I would support their needs from like pre-formation to venture capital. And so I remember going that route. So I started my practice and it was very scary, in this big, New York City and all these big firms. And it's like, who people don't know me and how am I going to get clients? But it was, it was a fun challenge for myself because I'm so like risk averse and want to make sure everything is, being safe and taking calculated chances. So that was interesting. Did really well. I was able to get clients. And I feel like because I was with the startups, it's almost like my clients could relate to me as opposed to like some of the larger firms. And I was able to add more of like a human element where I'm like, okay, I understand what you're doing and I can provide you support from a legal perspective. But even after all that, I just felt like I was unfulfilled. And I couldn't explain it because this whole concept of like success was not lining up with, how I felt at the end of the day, like really felt like something was missing. And I remember it was like a turning point where I was turning 30 and my husband was like, what do you want for your 30th birthday? It's like a big milestone. And I was like, I think I just want to go away. I just want to go away by myself. I want to figure out what I want. It's like, I've been so set on going to law school and becoming a lawyer and I'm living the, what I should be feeling like satisfied and happy, but it's just something doesn't like what's missing. And it feels like it's a big hole and I don't know how to fill it. And and I said, I just want to go away and do some soul searching, as cliche as it sounds. And I remember one of my other friends was also turning 30 and she was going to do the same thing. And so we said, well, why don't we go together? Let's go take a trip. And so we planned this, it was like 10 or 12 day trip to Morocco. And we started in the north and we went all around and there was this one moment when stars start to align. I remember we were in this shop. And so, we wanted to go buy argan oil, which obviously, Morocco is famous for. And so my friend said, I have a hookup to this place where we can actually go get real authentic argan oil. And I was like, perfect. So we go, because there's a lot, if you buy it in the market, it could have like other oils mixed in. It could be synthetic. So I was like, no, I want like the real cold press, like good stuff. Yeah. So we went and we start like, testing these oils and I smelt it and it smelled nothing like any argan product that I had experienced in the past before. Like, my hair oils and my body oils. And I said, well, are you sure this is real? And he goes, yeah, no, this is like real, whatever. So it turned out that, and I was curious, and I get back to the hotel and I'm researching. I'm like, why does this argan oil smell nothing? Or like the colors and very different than the stuff that I'm used to seeing. So I learned about this concept called marketing level ingredients, right? So if, let's say, you buy an argan product and it says argan oil infused with argan oil, it could have 0.001% of argan oil in it, but it could claim to be an argan product. And a lot of products that we use today are using synthetic fragrances and synthetic like colors to make it look a certain way or smell a certain way, but it is all it could be synthetic and it could just have like a 0.001% of argan in it. And this real thing where I'm like so far removed from anything I'd ever experienced before, you know, was the real stuff. But you know, I was like in shock. Like for a second, I just felt cheated, like in all the products that I'd been using. And so yeah, that was sort of like this moment where I was like, uh-huh. But then what was also happening simultaneously was I had cystic acne. And so as someone, you know, who's always in court meetings and client meetings, I just felt like, you know, I couldn't go to these client meetings barefaced, and anything that I was putting on my skin would make me look cakey and far from natural. I was frustrated with my routine of using all these skincare and makeup products. And after all the effort that I was putting in, I just couldn't look natural. You know, just was very frustrated with that. So I, you know, remember turning to the industry and going, I want to find the product that does two things. I wanted, you know, being the lawyers, I'm like, what are my needs, right? So my needs are one, it has to simplify my routine. I don't want to use a bunch of skincare. I don't want to use a bunch of makeup. I just want, boom, like a few different things in my whole routine. I'm done, right? And the second thing is I just wanted to look flawless, like good skin. That's it. Couldn't find anything. There's been great brands in most recent years, like Fenty Beauty and others that have really helped, you know, bring light to inclusivity in shades, especially. But no one was really focusing on the underlying skin issues of medium to deeper skin tone. So people of color. So, you know, our needs are, we have dark circles, we have hyperpigmentation, our skin scars differently. So there was no products that were really focusing on our needs or my needs. So in frustration, one day over dinner, I like turned to my husband. I'm like, you know, this is a need. I can't find anything. And he said, well, let's create it. And I said, well, what do you mean? And then it was so easy for him to say, because he's actually been the first ops hire, and he's sort of like an ops brain. I guess like how I sum his career is he would take like ideas and bring them to life and walking through the whole steps and making the whole process efficient. So anyways, we started this passion project. I was still practicing as an attorney. He was still obviously working, and we started this passion project to create products that would help simplify your routine and, you know, inspire you along the way. So we love to travel, and we wanted to be able to bring our journeys and tell our story. So yeah, we embarked on this journey, now 3 years ago, and we started formulating with local labs here in the US. And a year and a half later, we were able to arrive at our first suite of products, which are color correctors that contain active ingredients that not only conceal any skin concerns, but also help improve them over time.
Why do you use flowers so much in your designs, in your products, in ingredients?
Yeah, so good question. So here, for example, this is a product, Hawaii, and is inspired by this watching the sunset on this beautiful island in Hawaii. And it has white lily, kokoi nut, and noni in it. So those three ingredients are actually not only there to take you away to Hawaii, but for example, like white lily helps with the dark circles and hyperpigmentation. Kokoi nut helps like plump and smoothen, like the vitamin A in there helps with the skin. And noni helps with like any acne scarring that you may have. So we wanted to create, so Jorn is about, you know, we don't want to just, for us, it's like experiences are key, right? So we want to create these beautiful experiences. And so we wanted to not only take you away to that moment. So it's almost like this moment, what my dream is like, you know, every time you use Jorn, you take that moment for yourself. So you can read the story and like be transported to that beautiful island watching the sunset, right? So for us, like the flowers are key because each of the products has one unique flower in it. And this kit comes on a bed of five flowers. So we always, again, we're working on some really cool ways to play on other senses as well. So we want to create those experiences. And we, you know, hope that with the unboxing that you will remember that moment every time you use our products.
That's amazing. So many things I want to touch on here. I guess one of the first things that I want to ask about is you called it a passion project, and you were still working full time as a lawyer whilst embarking on this project. What was going through your mind at that time? Was this something that was for you to try out and see if it could work, or were you thinking of always keeping the law, you know, as your day job and having this as like your side hustle?
So the first thing was, okay, I was like, okay, well, I have to continue to do this because I've invested 7+ years of education and, you know, bar exams and whatever not. So, I mean, I have to continue to practice. But I was like, okay, you know, I'll wake up 2 hours earlier and I'll put X amount of hours out of my, like a small chunk out of my day, and I'll start putting time towards this passion project. So, you know, for me, it was sort of, okay, being a lawyer brain, I was segmenting my day to saying, okay, this is going to be my passion project hours, and it's going to be my legal hours. And then, you know, so that's how it started. But then once I started to realize how big of a need it was, I talked to like countless women, makeup artists, and, you know, finding their struggle, and they felt that they had similar struggles. And they were like, yeah, we just hack, you know, use these products and we hack it. I was like, oh my God, like this is bigger than how I envisioned it. And then that's sort of like slowly, like my passion project hours started to become bigger. And then I was, you know, spending less time taking on new clients, and I was handing off some bigger cases. Was like, no, like I need to work on this. So that was like my initial, but holding on to law was because I felt like I had invested so much of my time, and I thought, you know, my parents migrated to move to Canada for us to have this higher education and have these, you know, this amazing careers. And it was sort of like holding on to that. It was sort of just, you know, this balancing, like, I need to do this, even though I don't want to, because I've invested so much time in it already.
You were holding on to it. What was there something that made you decide it's okay to let go?
Oh my gosh. I think it was like my husband. He's like, listen, you need to you need to close out your practice. Like, you just have to let it go. And I was like, but I've invested like so much time, and this has been like a year long career, and, you know, all this. And I just remember him saying one thing. He's like, are you going to let your past impact your future? Like, the unhappiness, like, is it worth it? And I think for me, just sat there and I was like, okay, you're right. Like, you know, I get it. I'm like, he's like, you've invested 7 years of being not satisfied, right? Are you going to invest the next 7? And that thought was kind of scary. And then I was like, okay, that makes sense. And like, I was like, okay, I'm going to say I'm not going to practice anymore. And I'm going to, you know, announce it, because it's also like announcing it to like, you know, my parents and saying, okay, this is it. I'm going to focus on this instead. But yeah, I think that was probably that moment where just like, clicked, like, okay, yeah, I cannot spend another 7 doing this thing again.
You mentioned that when you started your law office as a lawyer, it was scary, and you were worried about finding clients and whatnot. Contrast that with when you were starting Jen, or when you left law completely to focus on Jen. What was the scariest bit about it?
Okay, so I knew with my law practice, I mean, I'm a lawyer, right? So I know that I can find work in the sense, like, you know, I know I can, at the end of the day, like, someone will need a contract review, like at the bare minimum, right? Or so the risk was way less when you have your law practice, because there's always going to be legal work that you can find, you know, that everyone needs some form of legal assistance at some point. Now, starting a company where you're going to create a product that could just be a fail, right? Like, I mean, every day, like, you know, it's like, okay, how do we, you know, Mir always says, my co-founder, he says, you know, it's always about getting it over like the hump every day, right? Like, how do we get it to go, get it over the hump? So for me, this was scary because I had invested, or, you know, it took over a year and a half to create a product. Then once it hits the market, like, you know, there's so many things that could go wrong. Like, you know, your tubes could explode, or the formula, like, eventually ends up people hate it, you know, like there's so much more that could go, could be unexpected, or things that you cannot plan for when you launch a product versus, you know, being an attorney and starting your own practice. So this was like way scarier.
Yeah. I would love to understand what kind of skills or mindset you bring to Jen and how much of that lawyer is still in you as you run a business like Jen, you know, a skincare makeup company. Do you consider yourself a creative?
Yeah. Yes. I think I, you know, being an attorney, everything is very structured and every boxed into hours, right? Like everything is billable hours. Like you're like, okay, I'm going to spend 45 minutes working on this client case. And once that 45 minutes up, you can for the most part, put it away. But I remember when I first started working on Jern and even like working on our Instagram, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to spend, you know, at 45 minutes and I need to come up with the name of this product. And then I'll have a name and then I'll move on to the next product. And I was just like, you know, the first time I sat there and I was like, okay, you know, 40 minutes and I had nothing. And I was like, oh my God. And I remember like turning to me, I'm like, it's been 45 minutes and I haven't come up the name and I need to come up with like the next product's names in the next whatever many minutes. And he just looked at me, he goes, babe, like creativity doesn't work that way. Like, you know, you could spend 2 minutes and you'll have something, or you're gonna have to spend 10 hours. And I was like, but how do you plan for that? And it was really interesting to just like allow myself the space and time to, you know, let that, if it's not happening, it's just not going to happen. Let it go, go to something else and it'll just automatically come to you. And yeah, so I think I've learned to allow myself to be creative and allow myself to have the space to do things. And I don't know, like I'll come up with something. I'm like, to Mir, I'm like, look, I came up with this. And he's like, yeah, like you are creative at heart, but it was just that I'd never allowed myself, like, you know, to really explore that just because my career was very much like, you know, you could put things inside a box and, you know, there's only so much creativity you can come up with when you're writing contracts, right? But so yeah, I think I definitely like coming from like the dance, you know, just I think I am a creative at heart, mm-hmm. but what I think I've acquired and I do use a lot of is like sort of like the structure, and, you know, being methodical, that those are things that I learned for, or just, you know, that were bred to me being in law school for so long and living that type of life.
How have you learned what things make you creative, or what kind of environments or practices or rituals you have that allow you to be creative?
I think for me, if I'm working on something creative, I just try to let go of everything or unlearn everything I know, or try to, like, you know, even if we're looking at packaging concept, my brain immediately starts like checking for spellings and making sure sentence structure is okay. So just sort of going in with this,
me
like,
too.
Okay, yeah. And I'm like, and I know, like, oh my God, and Mir, it drives him crazy where I'll be like, no, but you have to fix this comma before I can read the rest of the packaging to make sure that the design's okay. He's like, let it go. He's like, just let it go for me. I'm like, I can't. But I think just walking in with like, just giving yourself like sort of that empty space to go in and take in things with no expectations. But that works really well for like the creative projects.
What are some of your self-care rituals? You mentioned, you know, you used to be working 80-hour weeks. How have you approached self-care, just life balance, differently now?
Yeah, so I think having a two-year-old enforces balance in your life. So mm-hmm. she makes it, and you know, her whole, mama, dance with me, let's dance.
Aww.
So yeah, it's cute, but I love that. Like, you know, in the middle of the day, she'll get this urge to dance, and then she'll come over and then we'll just play a song on Alexa. I'm like, okay, Eliza, just two songs, you know? So yeah, I do think, so I personally believe that if I take good care of myself, I'm going to be the best founder for, you know, for the company, as well as a, you know, the best mom. So I definitely prioritize my mental health. I don't think it means that I need to take away like hours of my day to do something, but it's just about being present and conscious. So if I feel like, okay, I need some time, I like step away. Like, you know, we have this beautiful lake that runs to the city and it's like 10 minutes from where we live. So if I just need some time, like I just love, like, you know, I turn to me, I'm like, okay, I'm having one of those days. I need to step away for like an hour and I need to just go out on the water and I'll just, you know, recharge and like, you know, whatever my body needs, and I'll come back. So I think for me, that's one of my favorite ways to take care of myself is being able to step away. But even just every day, you know, like I try to be present and conscious. I wake up quite early. I have like a, you know, I do a prayer and I do like, you know, 5-minute meditation. And then I like try to have my coffee without anything. I just like try to, we have a cute little backyard. I like to sit out there and just sort of take that time for myself to be present. I think that is really important for me, especially before like the craziness of the day start and then the meetings. And then, you know, I have to feed my kid and then it's like, okay, now we have to do a little dance and all of that. So yeah, I just try to do something small for myself every day just to really nourish the soul.
So you wake up and have some time to yourself before your daughter wakes up. Then when she wakes up, what happens?
So like my, like 6:45, I'll wake up, I'll like shower, get ready. I'll come out and I'll, you know, do a little prayer. I'll do a quick little meditation, have my coffee, and then I work. So poor kid, her schedule is a little messed up right now because of, you know, the just working from home. So she wakes up around like 11 a.m. So I'll have the morning to work. So then I work and it's like, I'm just like not breathing. Yeah. So I'm just like knocking things out. And then when she wakes up, I'll have her get her breakfast and get her, you know, dressed and all of that. And she's great with like independent play. So then it depends. Like some days she's not, some days she is. I mean, you know, just like any traditional two and a half year old. And then I'll try to get work done. And then it's just a balance of like, and then Mir's like, I have a call and, you know, then he'll take her over and then I'll step away from my call. So it's sort of like a whole juggle back and forth, through the day, but it's, you know, I think definitely this time has been nice because we've had the opportunity to spend time. I've had the opportunity to spend this much time with her because I didn't take off maternity leave when she was born. I was like back at work because we had to launch the brand like 6 months later. So I was sort of really, you know, I had to dive right in. So it gave me that time, but it's also, it can be exhausting and some days are way harder than others, but it's about saying, okay, I've had it. But yeah, it's, you know, but she's a good kid. Like she understands and, you know, to the point where maybe she just sees too much. Cause the other day I was like, Eliza, come here. And she says, I'm busy. I'm sending an email. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, and that was my moment where I was like, okay, hang around more 2.5-year-olds because you should not be sending you. But yeah, she's our chief, we say CTO. She's our chief toddler officer.
Oh, that is so adorable. You moved to Austin 6 months ago during a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Why to move from New York to Austin?
Oh my gosh, this might be like a whole other story, but we, in January of 2020, you know, Mir decided to, come on Jern full time and, you know, we want to set like really start building a team and like dropping roots. So we thought, where should we do that? So in Jan-Feb, we decided let's do that in LA. So we made a decision to move out of the New York area and we're going to transition out to LA. So we packed up and we flew out to LA and we were going to be there for about 2 weeks to look for like retail and, you know, where we want to live. We would go spend like a couple of weeks with my parents in Canada and then we would tell our movers to bring our stuff wherever we're going to be. And then we would like settle in. And like 10 days into our search, like the 7th day, I remember the NBA decided to like shut down and things are starting to shut down. And then we said, okay, well, you know, our movers said it would take X period of time to get our stuff. So we're like, okay, let's go to my parents for a few weeks. When the pandemic is over, we'll come back. And so we packed this like one suitcase for the three of us. And now we're in Canada. And obviously we're like, okay, the few weeks passed by and then like a couple of months and now we're like, oh my God, like, you know, in Canada and we're still, you know, things are not looking good. So during that period we thought, and we really thought about our move. And we really I'd been to Austin, we've both been and we loved it. And we decided that it was actually going to be a better fit for us and a place where we could actually build a community. And so we packed up and then once we made the decision, we said, okay, we're going to get to Austin. Now, while we were in Canada, because we ended up not knowing we were going to be there for that long, Mir's passport expired. And now the only way you can get across the border is by land. So now we're like, okay, how do we get across the border? And so my home is a walking bridge, but now, you know, we've been there 6 months and we've acquired a lot of stuff. And so we're like, okay, how do we get across like a car's load worth of stuff? So my dad got us to the border. And then we're like, okay, we couldn't walk across, just too much stuff. So we across to the border, and the border control was like, no, Uber, you need to turn back around. And we're like, now what do we do? They're like, well, you can walk across. So now I take my daughter in her stroller and like a suitcase, and my husband's got two suitcases. He walks us across, and it was like, by walking, I just mean it was maybe like a 3 minute, two and a half minute walk. We get across, and now we're waiting on the corner, street corner in America, while he's going back to Canada to just pick up, like, you know, the rest of our bags. It's like one of those things, like, you know, I think we're going to probably tell this story in the future. But
when you came to the idea for Jern, which is, you know, a beauty skincare brand, have you always mm-hmm. been interested in like beauty, makeup, skincare when you were younger?
Great question. This is another thing when I was going through my soul searching, Mir asked me, he's like, you know, what do you, if you don't want to practice law, like, what do you want to do? He said, what was the one job you were like the happiest at? And it was when I was a makeup artist. So I used to work for this company called Merle Norman. And my mom was like, literally, she used to go shop there, and she would be like, my daughter does such a good job with makeup. And, you know, and she just, you know, would talk to like the owner there, and the owner's like, okay, tell her to come by and, you know, we'll interview her. And that's how I got my like first real job. Mostly older women shopped there, but, you know, they had these amazing skincare and amazing color cosmetics. And, you know, I remember the owner took me on and taught me a lot and sent me to training as well. So yeah, being a makeup artist was like the happiest I felt like I ever was. And, I went down to freelance for many years after, and it felt like I was able to, that was like my creative outlet for myself. Like when I use makeup versus, and also like when I was able to, you know, make women feel their most beautiful for their big days and events. So yeah, beauty has been a huge part of my life. Yeah. You know, it is not just, you know, outside, like it's about taking care. Like for me, beauty is self-care. It is taking care of yourself. It is truly more than skin deep. Like for us, even as a brand, like we don't want to just be a beauty brand. We want to, you know, help the world. Like women education is really important for us. That's something that we want to get involved with or help with. So for us, like having that as a mission, like that's beauty, right? So yeah, for us, beauty is just more than like, you know, we're more than just a beauty brand. Beauty is more than skin deep.